Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. We're talking about lots of things with James Carse that take me to a nice little book you wrote called The Silence of God. We did a program not long ago with a couple of people who really pay attention to sound ecology, to soundscapes. And as I was readdressing your wonderful book, The Silence of God, you talk about a continuing quest for spiritual wholeness. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hearing you talk about as you talk about these searches and creating infinite games, that we can move out of places we have been searching for a spiritual wholeness. Well, in the heart of New York City, where the material is very clearly at the top of the agenda for many, as it is in our culture.
Sure.
Is this the next place we're going? Can we break beyond that, build from a pretty sturdy foundation of materialism in this quest for a spiritual wholeness?
Well, one of the things, of course, New York is famous for is in a way, the world's singularly most notable place is the arts.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening in the arts in New York is still remarkable. There is
in
an enormous community of people who come together to do original and creative things. People with very great talent, people whose futures are unknown, who don't know where they're going in that really richly spiritual sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've lived in New York most of my life, and I've found that it's an intensely spiritual place in that way. Now, that's not the only way of being spiritual, but
is not the common perception of New York City.
Yeah. When you say spiritual, people don't think of making a pilgrimage to New York.
My friends in Iowa would say, "Yeah, really?
Right.
Well, I wouldn't have thought of that."
You know, they say, "Paul, have you finally lost it?"
Yeah, I know people still say to me, "How could you live in New York? That I meet elsewhere."
There's a chauvinism on both sides of that picture.
That's right. And my kids, my children, who are now all in their 30s, grew up in the city, right here, as a matter of fact, in the Village. And they can't imagine how anyone could not live in New York. I mean, they are really provincial.
But is that not common to the human condition
that we cannot imagine not being us? I think it is. Yeah, but the point I'd like to make about the city is that I want to make a big sweeping statement about it, because this may surprise some people. Never in the history of the earth has there been a human community so diverse, religiously, linguistically, culturally, ever. This is it. And remarkably living together in peace. I mean, there are some conflicts, but there are no suicide bombers running around, and there are no ethnic killers, you know, that kind of thing. New York is a remarkably peaceful place when you consider all of the possible tensions there could be. But to live in a place where there's this much ethnicity, or varied ethnicity, where, you know, there are schools, public schools, where children speak as many as 50 or more languages.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the school functions pretty well.
In a world that is getting smaller and smaller, faster and faster, there are some lessons there, aren't there?
Yeah, there are some lessons. One of the lessons, by the way, I think, is that the old image of the melting pot, where everyone becomes like each other, it's not the most desirable image, and as a matter of fact, it's not the most functional one.
Mm-hmm.
We're not melting together. In some ways, people gather in a large context like the city of New York, and find ways of keeping their distinctness without being a conflict with the rest of the community.
How does one find silence in New York?
Well, you know, strangely. You know, this is now. I'm going to speak make a spiritual point. A silence, the mystics always knew, was an interior state.
Ah.
So solitude, for example, is not being out of the presence of other human beings. It's being whole and not in a position of radical dependence on other human beings.
Radical dependence?
Right. So I think that a large city like this is a place that fosters silence and solitude.
Mm.
I never saw a conflict in that, in my own life and experience.
Well, and silence is an important part of our existence, isn't it?
It is, yeah. The one of the important things for silence for me, and I've done some reading, writing, and teaching about this, is that if you're not silent, you can't be listening. You know, if you're talking all the time, you're not going to hear what anyone else is saying. And the this doesn't mean just keeping your mouth shut, because many of us are talking inside, our voices are so busy in our own heads that we are not really listening to what's going on around us. So silence is a very difficult human skill.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of silence that leads to genuine listening. So
maybe we have a little work to do on listening.
We have a lot of work to do on listening. Yes,
yeah.
Right. People are very good at talking. And very.
It's remarkable how many different perspectives are beginning to say, and I must listen mm-hmm. to parts of the human experience and the disciplines in which people engage who are beginning to listen to people doing wonderful work in bizarrely different places,
mm-hmm.
and then they come up with new and better ideas.
Well, we mm-hmm. have the illusion that we can drive change by dint of reason and presumably by our language, that somehow or other we can control the world with words.
Mm-hmm.
And it ain't true.
No. Well, as a matter of fact, we can't control the world with anything.
At all.
Yeah. That's important to remember that.
Yeah, that's right.
We are
literally out of control. And what I'd like to
you
argue
mean
is...
You mean by definition?
By definition. And I think that's not a bad thing, necessarily.
Say some more.
That is, if we... You know very well that any time one person begins to think he or she can control another, there's a lot of mischief ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Things don't work out well. Controlling is not an ideal human relationship. So, and I think that's one of the great failures of the great ideologies of the 20th century. It was a way of controlling large numbers of people. Ideology didn't work, and shouldn't work. And so, I like Rousseau on this issue, the 18th century French philosopher, who said that a society should be as contradictory to itself as possible without falling apart.
Hmm.
So it should be as out of control as possible.
To keep the ideas stirred up?
But still keep intact. Keep ideas stirred up. Keep human relationships fresh.
Keep
surprising,
options open.
Interesting.
Surprising.
Keep the arts alive.
Yeah.
Surprising. That's very important.
That also sounds like a city. That's why our cities are so important.
Yes, it does.
So
that's
important.
See, that's why.
But it also sounds like a forest.
Well, those two metaphors aren't so radically different.
Oh, yeah?
Going into a place, well, wilderness is probably a better idea. I mean, the city is a kind, is in a way the modern wilderness. You go into it not knowing what's going to happen. You prepare yourself for surprise. Whereas most of our education prepares us against surprise. We're trained to deal with everything that comes up, rather than trained to see things coming up we don't know what to do with, and therefore are more open to the mysterious and to the unknown.
We're going to come back and talk about improvisation. We're going to do that.
Oh, all right.
This is the Paula Gordon Show. We're with James Carse in Greenwich Village, New York City. Bill Russell is with me. Professor Carse, I'm going to call him professor for just a moment, spent many years professing the history and literature of religion at New York University. We'll be right back. Stay with us.